So, we left off with David there. Actually, the last chapter we talked about Saul, but if you recall, David is with the Philistines and has made his camp there. He's part of that group. It's really he's part of the enemy's camp now. And then we talked about Saul and his mediums, but so let's start reading chapter 29, verse 1. It says, "Then the Philistines gathered together all the armies at Aphlak." Aphlak. Now I'm messing up because Aphek, and the Israelites encamped by a... Are you done? A fountain which was in Jezreel. And the lords of the Philistines passed in review by hundreds and by thousands. But David and his men passed in review at the rear of Achish, with Achish. Then the princes of the Philistines said, "What are these Hebrews doing here?" And Achish said to the princes of the Philistines, "Is this not David, the servant of Saul, king of Israel, who has been with me these days or these years? And to this day I have found no fault in him since he defected to me." So the battle lines have been drawn. They are going, in a sense, they're preparing here for a battle between the Philistines and Israel. It was going to be a fierce battle. It wouldn't be, they weren't taking it light. They were reviewing the troops there and so forth for the sake that the Philistines wanted to wipe out Israel. And so here's David in their midst, right? And it's really a strange thing to think of that David would be in the midst of the enemies, you know, because he's written such great psalms, and we knew David prior to, you know, chapter 27, where his allegiance was with the Lord. His allegiance was even with Saul, king of Israel. And it's heartbreaking because we know people that have went this way, where all of a sudden, it seems like all of a sudden they have taken their encampment has been in the camps of the enemy, and it doesn't seem right. It doesn't appear right to us, and we wonder and we scratch our head, how did this ever happen? You know, well, it isn't by a moment's chance that he had went to the camp of the Philistines. David was running and running and running, and I think the pivotal moment might have been the death of Samuel. And his discouragement set in, and he went to the camp of the Philistines. It just goes to show you that, you know, it's only by the grace of God that we would even stand today in our faith that we have. You know, we could be just like, we got to be careful, right? We can fall right back into the world if we don't put up our guards to the enemy, right? So look at chapter 28, the beginning of chapter 28. It says there that now it happened in those days that the Philistines gathered their armies together for war, to fight with Israel. And Achish said to David, You assuredly know that you will go out with me to battle, you and your men." So here's a promise that Achish would make to David. Why? Because Achish saw David as a loyal man who was loyal to the leader, right? And in this case, the Philistine leader was Achish. So David said to Achish, "Surely you know that you know what your servant can do." "Yeah, I know what you can do. You've killed Philistines. You've killed tens of thousands of Philistines. I know what you can do. You're a man of war." So Achish was very understanding of what he meant here. And Achish said to David, "Therefore, I will make you one of my chief guardians forever." That was a big statement, forever. So now the Philistines are going into Israeli territory. And again, this is more than just a nice little battle between the Philistines and the Israelites. Remember, the Philistines, when they sent Goliath forth, their whole thing was, let's either make them slaves or get rid of them, right? So they had a death warrant, in a sense, for Israel. Not only are the Philistines reviewed here in verses 1 through 3, but also David and his men. Who would have thought, right? Who would have thought David would be in this position? In chapter 27, you know, he would fight against, you know, with the Philistines, he would fight against God's people. And so it is a tough thing to grasp, I think, with David, because obviously even today Israel would look upon David as their king. You know, they admired David there. But look at what the Philistines would ask. The Philistine there, the lords of the Philistines, or the princes of the Philistines, would say, "What are these Hebrews doing here? What are they doing here?" Because, see, the Philistines knew, look at the Israelites, they worship a different God than we do. We've got many gods, they've got one God. Right? They could see the difference. They could see the difference between David. He was so lost in discouragement. This wasn't the same David that was killing the Philistines. This is a different David, you know. This isn't brave David. This isn't courageous David. This is David with the enemy. How could David fight against his own God? David seemed to be, in a sense, out of his mind, right? Spiritually, he was out of his mind. He wasn't in a good place. And don't, you know, we can get like this. We can get like this very quickly, and we can fight against God on things when He shows us things, when He asks us to do things, you know. And all of a sudden, we're fighting against that, because that's not our way, that's His way. And well, we want our way. We want the easy street and all of this, right? And so, it's very easy to get into this boat of being just frail in your spiritual mind. And sometimes God will take and He'll use the world to redirect us. He will do things in the midst of them. They have no idea that God is using them. But God can use the world. When we get out of our spiritual mind, He can use the world to redirect us. And that's because He's sovereign, right? That's because He's sovereign. He can redirect the world. Or He can use the world to redirect us. And God would use the Philistines to remind David of who he was, too. Is this not David? In verse 3. Is this not David? And then Achish would say, "Look, I found nothing wrong with David." In other words, he was no threat to Achish. He was no threat to the Philistines. See, the enemy, the true enemy, had David exactly where he wanted him. He was no threat to him. The enemy likes us to be in his camp. He likes us to take the back seat in the church. You know, he likes us to not step forward in boldness, not step forward when we fear. You know, sometimes when we fear things, we don't step forward because of that. The enemy likes that. He desires us to be more fearful of what other people think of us. You know, he desires us not to have the boldness that the Holy Spirit has empowered us to have. He likes it when we're content in our lives. He likes us when we're always in the easy chair, reclining back. You know, he likes that because we're no threat to him. And that's what Achish was saying about David. Look at him. There's no worries here. I don't find anything to be worried about with this guy. He's going with the flow. He's so loyal. He's just going to go with the flow. Question is, why was he so, Achish, so confident in David? He had knowledge. One thing, he had knowledge about the enemy. Achish's enemy here was Israel, and certainly Saul. And David had some superior knowledge of their workings, right? Being the loyal man that he was. And also because of his actions. See, Achish knows who's loyal and who's not. He goes back in time here and he says here, who has been with me these days or these years? And in this day I have found no fault in him since he defected from me. So his loyalty over the years, over the days, and by his actions toward Achish, it made his defection obvious. He says, look at, he's defected towards me. Meaning that he is favoring me. He has come because he's favoring me. He's trusting me. He's in our camp. And David said this of himself, even as we read through chapter 28 there, verse 1 and 2. How does the world see us? See, when we are in the camp of the enemy, they should know that we're the enemy. Right? They should know that we are different. They should know that, you know, we're not like them. We shouldn't fit in. We should stand out, right? We should stand out because Christ is within us. Right? That's the difference. That's the difference there. Verse 4, but the princes of the Philistines were angry with him. So the princes of the Philistines said to him, make this fellow return. They're angry with Achish, his decision here. Or the decision he wants to make. That he may go back to the place where you have appointed for him. And do not let him go down in with us to battle, lest in the battle he becomes our adversary. They thought perhaps maybe when they got to the battle, David would change his mind. And he would see the Israelites and he would be reminded of them. It was a valid concern, I think, of the Philistines. That he might see somebody in the battle that he actually knew. And he might turn the other way. And all of a sudden now David is near them and he's their adversary. And they didn't want to take that risk. And I think about people that have been adversaries in the past. There have been adversaries in my life that I you know, in the flesh, you don't necessarily want to trust them. But when God saves them, there's a difference there. The heart's been changed. We sang it tonight, you know, that the Lord transforms. He transforms our mind. He conforms our will to His will, and so forth. When God does that, see. But from a worldly standpoint, they don't understand that. And they certainly don't want an adversary within their midst. It goes on, therefore, with what could he reconcile himself to his master, if not with the heads of these men? Is this not David, of whom they sang to one another in dancing, saying, Saul has slain his 10,000 and David his, or Saul has slain his thousands and David his 10,000s. So they remember that, right? So the other leaders here, the Philistines, were not in agreement with old Achish, right? They didn't want it his way. They feared that this assault would come not from necessarily because the Israelites were stronger, but because David was in their midst. And then all of a sudden he would turn and be their adversary. And he understood that he had tremendous power, even more power than King Saul. He was a man of war, much braver and much more courageous in his own, you know, he killed 10,000s of Philistines. He was a man of war. He was one to be feared. And they recalled what David had neglected to remember, right? They remembered Goliath. They remembered the Philistines that David had slaughtered. They remembered these things about David. And here's David in the camp. Then Achish called David and said to him, Surely as the Lord lives, you have been upright, and you're going out and you're coming in with me, and the army is good in my sight. For to this day I have not found evil in you since the day you have come to me. Nevertheless, the Lord's do not favor you. Therefore return now and go in peace, that you may not displease the lords of the Philistines. So Achish confronts David. He says, Surely as the Lord lives. You got to wonder why he spoke that, but some people say that even today. Right? That it has no meaning to them, right? They might say, well, the Lord will do this, or I hope the Lord blesses me, or whatever. They speak of the Lord as if they knew him, but all they know is a name. You ever know anybody like that, where all they know about the Lord is his name? And they're using his name sometimes just for their benefit. I think for Achish's sake here, he was, in a sense, just saying this from a standpoint of just courtesy for David. As the Lord lives, just you need to leave. You know, it's better for you if you just leave, if you don't go with us to battle. So Achish sends him a home, in a sense, there, or where he had come from. So here we have David, right? David was, I mean, put yourself in his place here. He's in a bad position. Not only has he left Israel behind, he was hated by Saul. He defected and went to Achish, the enemy, the Philistine, and now he's not even wanted by them. Here's the next king of Israel, folks. Right? he was in a position where he had probably no peace. He's not even sure who he is, in a sense. He's wondering probably, why is everything going so awful for me? Of course, that's what happens when we do things ourselves. And look at what Achish says to him. That you should leave. Nevertheless, he says, the Lord's do not favor you. Therefore, return now and go in peace. Don't put up a fuss, that you may not displease the lords of the Philistines. Has David ever worried about displeasing the lords of the Philistines before? No, he would kill them. They were the enemy. He wasn't serving milk and cookies for them, right? He didn't care. But he cares now. See, David has traveled a long ways. So David said to Achish, but what have I done? It's a good question. And to this day, what have you found in your servant, as long as I have been with you, that I may not go and fight against the enemies of my lord the king? Then Achish answered and said to David, I know that you are as good in my sight as an angel of God. Nevertheless, the princes of the Philistines have said, he shall not go up with us to the battle. Now therefore arise early in the morning with your master's servants who have come with you, and as soon as you are up early in the morning and have light, depart. So David here appeals to Achish. He says, what's up? What have I done? You know, what have I done? David doesn't want to leave. He likes the camp. He likes to be in the camp of the enemy. He's found comfort there for some reason. And he wants to go to battle with him. Look at his loyalty, though. His loyalty to Achish. I think that's what David was saying. Just look. Look at, what have I done? Nothing evil here. There is no case against him. But they make him leave. They make him leave. Did they make him leave? I don't think they made him leave. I think the Lord made him leave. That just goes to show you, you know, when we're out there, you know, where we're not supposed to be. God is making things happen often in our lives that will make us defect the world. You know, when we get in the flesh and we defect the Lord, He doesn't defect us. He says He won't forsake us. He was there with David. He was making the enemy say what they wanted to say. David had bought into the camp of the enemy. So, he didn't need convincing. And I think that Achish didn't need convincing. But the Lord was changing the heart there of the Philistines toward David to shove him out, to get him out of the camp. It doesn't make sense otherwise. It has to be accredited to God that God loved David so much that he was making these things happen that weren't logical. It's not logical to put somebody in prison for 30 years when you know that he hasn't done anything, right? It doesn't make a hill beans of sense, right? It's not the way it works. But sometimes God does this stuff, you know, where it's not logical. Yet God orchestrates it. And He never forsakes David. God is continuing to draw David out of the enemy's camp. Remember the mighty outstretched arm of the Lord that I think David even talks about in the Psalms. It's the mighty hand of God that would do such a thing. So David and his men rose early to depart in the morning to return to the land of the Philistines. And the Philistines went up to Jezreel. Remember, Jezreel was a place in which one of David's wives were from. So it's interesting that the Philistines were going up to Jezreel, to me. And David was wanting to go with them to Jezreel, yet one of his wives was a Jezreelite, right? David's mind wasn't right. It wasn't focused on the Lord. But as they went to Jezreel, David went back to the land of the Philistines, back to the city where his family would be. He may not have been literally fighting, but figuratively, he was fighting. He was fighting against the Lord. He might have not been physically fighting the Lord, but figuratively, he was fighting against the Lord. It would be some time before David would realize his error and come back to the Lord. But God would also orchestrate that. He would do something here. He would start to do something here in chapter 30 that we're going to get into that awakens David. So chapter 30 says, "Now it happened when David and his men came to Ziklag." Remember, this is where they were. They had left their families and so forth. On the third day that the Amalekites had invaded the south in Ziklag, attacked Ziklag and burned it with fire, and had taken captive the women and those who were there. From small to great, they did not kill anyone, but carried them away and went their way. So when we're talking about Aphek to Ziklag, we're talking about 75 miles, okay, that these men are walking there vigorously. So if you think about this, it said that they arrive there on the third day. So during the third day, they arrive back at Ziklag, right? Well, if you simple multiplication, right? You were working on your homework back there a little earlier, right, Mariah? Simple multiplication would give us 25 miles per day. Now, I've hiked 8 or 9 miles a day, but never 25 miles a day. You know, that's a marathon. And they're doing a marathon every day for 3 days, in a sense. A little more, right? Or about marathon distance. So here they are, and even if you're in fine shape, at the end of the marathon days, you're dead tired. So here they are. They are getting close, and of course, when you get close to the city, you're thinking, "I'm almost home. I'm almost home. My family's there. It's going to be so exciting. I'm going to see the kids, and I'm going to see the wives. I'm going to see the wife, in my case." But David had two right there. And so, you know, here he is getting closer, and there's supposed to be this anticipation that we see. But instead, what they see is that there's nobody there. And the place has been burned, right? The first thing that you would think about when you saw the smoke, right, or the ashes, you would think, oh my goodness, my family, right? My family might be perished. I might be alone. It might be this may be worse than going to battle for David, right? So now things are starting to brew. And he finds out, though, that they were taken. I'm not sure exactly how all this information got to him, but it said it hit. But they had taken captive the women and those who were there, from small to great, and they did not kill anyone. I'm not sure David knew all this detail, but he certainly knew it eventually. David and his men should have been in that city when the Amalekites showed up. They should have been the ones protecting their families in that city. But instead, he had some thing going on where he just needed to go to war. He just needed to go to the battle. And of course, he was battling against God. He didn't need to be there. He needed to be at home protecting his family. Interesting enough is that when we think about this, chapter 27 reminds us of David when he went to the Philistines. And look what it says he did in verse 8. It says, "And David and his men went up and raided the Gershites and the Girgzites and the Amalekites and those nations that were inhabited in the land from of old, as you go to Shur, even as far as the land of Egypt. Whenever David attacked the land, he left neither woman nor children alive, or men nor women alive, but took away the sheep, the ox, the donkeys, the camels, and the apparel, and returned and came to Achish." We see David even more vicious when he was in the camp of the enemy than this. You can almost say that, you know, the Amalekites, at least, they had a little mercy. They just took the people captive, right? They just took their stuff and they burnt the city. A little more mercy than maybe we even see out of David. It said that when they came to the city, right, they had this expectation of what they would face. And what they found instead was everything was gone. Everything was burned that day. But their families weren't completely gone. They were just captive. They were just captive by the Amalekites. They were taken from them. They were taken by their enemies. And they were also taken because of David's selfish ambitions. And sometimes God does take things from us because of our selfish ambitions. As they were trying to serve themselves, their families were taken away, and their cities, their city there was burned. Now think about it. Think about and look where David was. He was defected from Israel. How could he go back? That struggle in his mind, right? I've defected from the Lord, from Israel, from my nation. How could I ever face them again? That kind of thing would be something that perhaps he was pondering. The ones he defected to were the Philistines, and they didn't want him. And now his family was gone. They were taken captive. Trying to think where we left off here. We read through verse 6. No? Oh, verse 3, okay. So, David and his men came to the city, and there it was burned with fire, and their wives and their sons and their daughters had been taken captive. Then David and the people who were with him lifted up their eyes and wept until they had no power to weep. So obviously, you know, this whole thing, you know, their families being gone and everything just entirely wiped out and burned was quite emotional. And David's two wives, Ahinoam the Jezreelitess, and Abigail the widow of Nabal the Carmelite, had been taken captive. Now David was greatly distressed, and the people spoke of stoning him, because the soul of all the people was grieved, every man for his sons and his daughters. But David stretched himself, strengthened himself in the Lord his God. So, as we were saying, when they came there, you know, they didn't find their families. They were very distressed, including David. And now David's got to face not only all the things that he's been through, and now losing his family, but the people that are surrounding him, right? The men that had been surrounding him, now they want to stone him. How much worse could it get? And every last thing that he ever owned was burned. And his family was gone. Who is left? Who is left? But the Lord, right? And sometimes the Lord brings us low so he can pick us up. You know, as I was reading through some of this, I was thinking of JP and I was praying for him so it was a good thing to read through this, you know, but just how low he got. And, you know, he had to get to that point and for the Lord to pick him up. You know, he had to lose everything. He had to lose his family. You know, he had to lose his job. He had to lose his house. Right? He had to lose everything in order for the Lord to pick him up, because sometimes the pride of man, we think we can achieve it all on our own, you know. We don't need the Lord. So here he was. He was all left alone, but the Lord was there. He hadn't forsaken him. He had no other place to run to, right? What a fabulous place for us to run, you know. There's not a better place to run than to the Lord, for sure. It says there that he had wept, not only due to the losses that described, but I think he started to realize all the things that he had went through was not the Lord's fault. It was nobody's fault but his own. He had allowed discouragement to come into his life, and he had allowed that to be infectious in his life, and he started to run with the wrong people. And we can have that tendency too when we start to think, well, maybe I just want an easier life. I don't want this hardness all the time. So I'll just go where it's easy. And we find out that it's better to be with the Lord. But we see, you know, this prodigal here, really, that's what he is, right? Just a prodigal son of the Lord, just running wild for a while. Yet the Lord never forsakes him. Matter of fact, when it's time, you know, he says there, finally, you know, David strengthens himself with the Lord his God. So there's an upturn here, you know. So it goes on and it says, and David said to Abiathar, the priest, Ahimelech's son, please bring the ephod here to me. And Abiathar brought the ephod to David. So David inquired of the Lord, saying, shall I pursue this troop? Shall I overtake them? And he said to him, pursue, for you shall surely overtake them, and without fail recover all. So there's great hope here, right? That he would inquire of the Lord, and we see David starting just to work through that repentance, right? And repent and start to inquire of the Lord. He reached his lowest point as the next anointed king. And now he's coming out of the ashes, you know, the ashes there that we saw that Ziklag had been just burned to pieces. Now God takes David out of those ashes and he makes something wonderful out of him, doesn't he?